Hi, this is Susie Larson, and thank you so much for listening to Live the Promise today. Our website is filled with even more powerful and encouraging interviews. Learn more by logging on to myfaithradio.com. Thanks so much for tuning in today. I'm Susie Larson, and this is Live the Promise, and we are here to help you engage in a strong and active walk of faith. Really glad you're listening today. If you just tuned in, you missed my earlier conversation with Sheila Walsh, and we gave away some Women of Faith tickets for here in the Twin Cities, and I want to give a special shout-out and a congratulations to Pat from Callaway, Minnesota, and Jen from Moorhead. Both won Women of Faith tickets. Just want to say thanks so much for connecting with us. So here's a question for you, and it's a probing one, and it might get under your skin a little bit, might irritate you a bit, but my pastor always says, you can't get your goat unless you got a goat to get. How's that? So here it is. Do you ever find yourself thinking, I don't deserve this when hard times hit? Do you struggle with that? Or do you find yourself thinking, I deserve this when it comes to promotion, a clean bill of health, or a specific relationship? Well, my guest today says entitlement whispers at us to take life easy, to pull back, to chill out. It seduces us with soft words like, hey, you're worth it. You don't deserve to have put in such a hard day. But entitlement and a better life, they simply do not go together. Like oil and water, they do not mix. That's from Dr. John Townsend's newly released book, The Entitlement Cure, Finding Success in Doing Hard Things the Right Way. And you know, we've got a culture of people who live with a sense of entitlement. And the truth is, choosing those shortcuts and those momentary comforts can stunt our spiritual growth, our mental growth, and impact our relationships in the most negative ways. So we're going to look at some of the signs and symptoms of entitlement and what we can do about it. Let me tell you about our friend Dr. Townsend. We'll get him on the show. Dr. John Townsend is a leadership coach, organizational consultant, psychologist, and best-selling author. He consults with corporations, family-owned businesses, and small businesses. He's written or co-written 25 books, listen to this, selling over 5 million copies. Dr. Townsend is active on the board of Mustard Seed Ranch, a residential program for abused children. He and his wife Barbie have two sons, and they live in Newport Beach, California. You can find his influencer page on our website with all that information if you want to go back to his site or read more about his books at myfaithradio.com. Dr. Townsend, welcome back to the program.
Hi, Susie.
Good to talk with you again. It seems like just yesterday we had you on the show. I'm excited to talk about this new book, and I said to you off the air, but congratulations on another fantastic book.
Thank you. We're real excited about it. It's coming out tomorrow, so I appreciate you having me on the show.
So it's coming out tomorrow, friends, but we have 5 copies. So at any point of this conversation with Dr. Townsend, if you want to chime in to the conversation, you got a question. You don't have to get on the air to get a book, but you got to give me a question. You can give it to Grace, 877-933-2484, or email Susie at myfaithradio.com. So before we get into just the inspiration even behind the book, John, I wonder if you would tell us if you've got a scripture that you've been thinking about these days or one that connects to this content that you can share with us.
Actually, it's the theme scripture for the entire book that I based it on, Susie. It's Isaiah chapter 50, verse 7, where Jesus in the pre-incarnate Christ, back in Isaiah, is speaking, and he says, that I have set my face like a flint, and I shall not be ashamed. And the idea there in the Hebrew, the phrase for set my face like a flint, literally means to tighten up my jaw, like when you've got to really have a difficult conversation or do something that's boring to you or do something you don't want to do. We all have to kind of set our face to get ready for something hard, but that is the key to success because that's how Jesus did it.
Yeah, and he did set his face like flint to that cross. I mean, it's like for the joy set before him, he went for it, he endured, and he prevailed. Amazing.
And we all benefited from that.
Yeah, good point. So in a moment here, we're going to unpack some of the ripple effect of the entitlement mentality. And you open this book with a story about a couple whose 25-year-old son was the source of great angst for them. And he was home playing video games, not getting a job, and wondering what is the problem here? So I want you to maybe give us a context of that scenario and what advice you gave them.
Well, I do a lot of organizational coaching and also business coaching. And this was a family that I was working with a family in the business, and they had just said, he's in his late 20s now, and he's kind of not getting to the launch. So I met with them all, and I found out that, he was sort of like developmentally backward, very smart guy, really a lot of gifts, but really just kind of saw no reason to get out there and find a job and get his own place because mom's a really good cook and she does the laundry pretty well.
What's not to love?
What's not to love there? And so, as it always happens, I had to engage him and mom and dad because it was a system problem, Susie. The system on his end was that he was not fulfilling his God-given, responsibility to leave and cleave, and he had entitlement issues. And I define in the book, entitlement as two attitudes. One is I'm special, and I should, be treated special, and the other is I should get something for nothing. And that was his attitude, is mom and dad owe that to me. They just do. Now, then I had to go after them and say, this isn't good for anybody, and I think you're being helicopter parents and rescuing him. And then the emotion started because mom felt guilty because she hadn't been – I think she was a working mom and felt guilty, so she overcompensated by letting him play video games too much. So I had to deal with their guilt that they weren't being good people, where I had to deal with his resistance to growing up. But it was a kind of a tough go, but really we all stuck with it. And within 6 months he was interviewing for jobs and even getting out for his own apartment, and now everything's fine. But we had to deal with entitlement, had to deal with that head on, Susie.
Indeed. And do you often see that passivity ties in to entitlement? And the reason I ask is because often I always liken that to a parasite in our lives, and it's like trading our birthright for a bowl of soup. I want immediate comfort. I don't want to pay the price, but I'm giving up so much long-term to kind of get through the moment. Do you see a direct connection there at all?
It's very direct. I mean, when you look at it developmentally, I studied like pediatrics and brain neurology and all that stuff about how we develop as babies. The first thing a baby does is become passive. I mean, but a baby has to be passive because they have no skills. They're helpless. And so what do you call the life support system for a baby, Susie?
Mom?
Call the mom. You call the mom, and she's nice, and she's warm, and she's loving, and she sort of gives her life to that child for a while. And that's kind of the only time in life you can be passive.
Exactly.
Because, you got to develop strength and skills and love and courage and all that. You don't have that yet, so you have to be passive. But after about the first year of life, God develops us so that we're supposed to, like, take steps and take responsibility and not bonk our little sister on the head and clean the table and all that. And so some people are still stuck at a very early developmental age, and that creates extreme entitlement in somebody, from 15 to 85. By the way, just FYI, some people have thought, well, this book is about a certain generation. It is not a generation-bashing book. I have seen a very, very, very mature, healthy, godly, people in their early 20s that I love. And I've also seen very entitled 85-year-olds. So it's certainly not a generation-bashing book.
No.
It's a human issue.
Well, I appreciate that so much. We're going to get into some of the causes that you identify in the book. But first, I just want you to say a word about some of the stories you referenced in the book. It's almost like the entitled person is clueless, and the issue for them is everybody else's irritation with them. But everybody else seems to be paying the bigger price. I mean, I think they're paying a huge price because they're totally sacrificing such huge potential. But is that a consistent thing where they're sort of at ease with themselves and they just want you to just, get a clue?
Well, it's the ease of the grasshopper over the ant. If you go to Proverbs 6, it says, "Be like the ant, you sluggard, who without a chief or a captain, she stores in the spring and then she reaps in the winter." So the ant is always thinking about the future. How's this going to affect my future marriage, my bank account, my spiritual health, my body? And they make those decisions. The grasshopper says, "Hey, I'm rocking out. I'm chilling." And so, no, they don't feel pain right now because somebody's paying the freight for them. Somebody's paying for it. But later in life, they suffer. So God's system is be the ant.
Enough said. That's exactly right. And you say this for entitlement. It's the person who is capable of taking care of himself but still expects others to do it for him. Or she believes he shouldn't have to play by the rules of responsibility. So how does a person come upon that mindset? What's the accumulation of circumstances and relationships that have gotten to them to that place?
Basically, it's come with two things. It's either they had a system around them that either rescued them or de-empowered them, or both. You can have a set of parents that did that. You can have a company that did that. Actually, you can have a church. I wish I could say that we don't have entitlement in the church, but we really do. And so instead of God's system of support someone, resource them, make them responsible, help them to fail and pick themselves up and all that, it's sort of like, I don't want you to feel bad, so I'll pay for everything. You never have to struggle. And if you're on the third string of the soccer team, you get a trophy twice as big as you are. Well, those sorts of things depower a person. And now we find out in the entitlement research that college kids who have been entitled in their life, they are totally paranoid and almost phobic in that they cannot take risk. They cannot fail. They have no skills to dust themselves off and say, what did I learn? They catastrophize it. They're terrified about it. And they're not making good workers in the workforce because nobody ever helped them fail well.
You know, I had a friend in college, and he was so gifted on so many levels, but he was the most self-aware person I'd ever met. And I asked him, I said, can I ask you a provoking question? He said, sure. And I said, you have so much giftedness. You are smart. You've got gifts, you know, oozing out of you, and yet you're the most self-aware person I've ever met. I said, what gives, you know? I mean, and that in a negative way, that he was very introspective and self-preserving in every way. And he
you
said,
mean like self-doubting and that sort of thing?
Yeah, just really insecure about every which way, making
sure.
A mistake, kind of that paranoia a little bit. And he said he was raised in a strong Christian home and great parents, but he said his mom sung his praises every which way. He said, I couldn't paint a bad picture. I couldn't. Everything I said was brilliant. Everything I painted was, you know, artwork. And he said, you can imagine my disillusionment when I got to college and found out, you know, my employers and my professors don't think I'm the most brilliant person in the world. He said he went through anger with his mom. He went through disillusionment with his identity. He goes, I don't really even know where to put my feet, and I have no confidence because I don't know what's true. Would you say that's a pretty common scenario?
It's really textbook, unfortunately, is that when a parent, we call that either the codependent or enabling parent, is afraid because they don't want their child to suffer self-esteem, they don't do their child a favor by protecting them from failure. And the way I always explain it to parents, and this is also, funny enough, you said this, this is for employers and businesses because they kind of have kids called employees. This is for employers as well as parents, Susie. I tell them, we all have a narcissistic self inside of us that says, I should be above the rules. Well, you got to starve that, but you feed the real self. So you don't praise your kid for like being good looking. They didn't do anything to earn that. God just, you know, and you don't praise them for having a really high IQ. They didn't do anything to earn that. You know what you praise them for? You praise them for two things. You praise them for their character. You know, you love people, and you really try hard, and you know you do things that are scary, and you love God. That's character, and you praise them for great effort. You know, I really see how much you worked on that. And if you start doing that, you won't have the same outcome that your friend had.
Hmm. Oh, talking to Dr. John Townsend right now, celebrating the release of his new book, The Entitlement Cure, Finding Success in Doing Hard Things the Right Way. Boy, this is a word for our day, don't you think? If you've got questions about how to identify that entitlement mentality, give us a call, 877-933-2484. I'd love to get a copy into your hands, 877-933-2484, or email Susie@myfaithradio.com. Call with your questions and comments. Love to hear from you. More with Dr. John Townsend in a moment. Tuning in today, I'm Susie Larson. This is The Promise, talking to Dr. John Townsend. He's sure a favorite guest to get on the show. We're celebrating the release of his new book. It actually comes out tomorrow, but we happen to have a few copies. Would love to get a copy into your hands if you want to chime into the conversation. We're talking about entitlement. In fact, the title of his book is The Entitlement Cure. He gives very practical advice on how to overcome this entitlement mentality. The subtitle is finding success in doing hard things the right way. And I think you're finding the answer just in that subtitle, 877-933-2484. Lori's checking in from Center City. She's got a question for you today, Dr. Townsend. Lori, welcome. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks, Susie. Mm-hmm. Hey, Dr. Townsend, I was just wondering, this is about the depowerment thing that you were talking about. Can that happen, like, between a man and a husband and wife, maybe if the wife does everything? Or do you think that perhaps sometimes the military instills that somebody else is always doing, and so then you assume that that's the way it should be? That makes sense.
Absolutely no ifs, ands, or buts. And this isn't a military issue. This can also be a corporate issue. Churches do this also. And large organizations do this. I work with professional athletes, and sometimes their team does this too. And what you have is there's a principle that says that we do what we're required to do. And that's not a great attitude, but it's just kind of where we are because we're all busy. And so if a person's not required to balance a checkbook, not required to take out the trash, and not required to wrestle with their children and read them Bible stories, they kind of won't unless they've got somebody structuring with them who says, I need a team around me, and I need you to be a team. So a lot of times when I work with a couple, in your case, what I always suggest on the Lori end, by the way, I don't know if this is about Lori, or maybe Lori's calling for a friend of Lori's, but whoever we're talking about, and it starts like this. In a very vulnerable way to say, Sam, I love you. I love that God's put us together. I love everything we have. But I don't feel like a team because I need help with balancing the checkbook and changing the tires and playing with the kids and giving them baths. And I need your help. A lot of times, if a person doesn't have major entitlement, it'll kind of break their heart and they'll feel their impact and say, you know, I've kind of been about me. I've been playing fantasy football, or I've been, you know, on the web all day, and I'm sorry. If you have a majorly entitled person, that's a different issue, and you have to go to consequences.
And give us an example of what a consequence would look like.
Sam, you're just hanging out with your friends and on TV, and I need a lover, a husband, a spiritual leader, and a dad, and somebody who picks up. And you ask them a second time and a third time. And if they don't respond, you go to Matthew 18, Lori, and it says, then you bring two or three people, then you bring the church. God has a system of escalation, and the consequence might be, we need help. I think maybe we need to see a coach or a counselor or a spiritual director. And then if that person says, now, I'm just going to go down the catastrophic line just so you'll know how this ends up. Person says, I have no interest in that. I'm happy. Well, what are you talking about? Then you say, then I need to go get counseling about my marriage by myself. I would like for you to be in the room because I'm going to be talking about you. But if you're not interested, I'm going to work on my marriage all alone. And then the marriage coach or counselor or spiritual director gives you some things. And then you get a book that I wrote called Boundaries in Marriage. And in Boundaries in Marriage, it talks about where you tell somebody, I would do anything for you. God put us together. But the Bible tells me I've got to guard my heart. So all those nights you want to go out and play or whatever you're doing, I will be less available to you emotionally. I can't be vulnerable with you. How can I be vulnerable with somebody who is not interested in my point of view? I have to spend more time, like maybe I got to get a babysitter and have godly girls that are not out with the kids, and I won't be home being, you know, your best friend. And you basically have to find ways to leverage out what that person wants from you in a healthy way until they realize, gosh, I really impact that person. I really hurt her feelings. I'm making her feel bad. And sometimes consequences are necessary to make the person wake up.
Lori, thanks for that call. I get a copy of Dr. Townsend's book, The Entitlement Cure, 877-933-2484. Doug from Waupun. Am I saying that? Waupun? How would I say that?
Waupun.
All right.
Waupun, Wisconsin.
Thanks. Yeah. Thanks for calling. What's your question for Dr. Townsend today?
My question has to do with, we have five kids we've adopted, and we're trying to raise them, and which is its own challenges. And to, you know, to be independent and be able to make decisions and do things on their own, you know, wisely, obviously. But one of our sons, our oldest son, is 19 now, and he was diagnosed with reactive attachment disorder. It's been just a total challenge. And it involves more than just the subject matter today. But I just want to know if you have any experience dealing with people with RAD and how that plays into all of this.
Plenty of experience. And, by the way, thank you for what you did for the world. Mm-hmm. And adopting five kids. Way to go, ma'am.
Yeah.
It's awesome. Yeah, and fortunately, well, the unfortunate part is it's really tough because with a reactive attachment disorder, the child moves away from what they need the most, which is love and relationship. They can't get close because of certain neurological or traumatic things that happen. So when you want to hold them, comfort them, they freak out and push away from them and put them into a panic state. But the fortunate thing about it is that the research is out there, and there's a combination of skills and sometimes medication that work very well. So my best advice is get the best person in Wisconsin who works with RAD, and now they have like great conferences and training programs on there, so the clinicians out there like myself are getting great training, and tell the person this is a high priority for us. The research is good these days.
Excellent. Doug, thanks for that call. We've got about 2.5 minutes before we have to take a break, and so if you want to carry this answer over to the other side, sure, please feel free. But this listener called in and said, is it ever too late to undo the effects of entitlement? I know a couple whose grown children are living in this mentality, and this couple is wondering how they can reverse what's going on. What say you, Dr. Townsend?
I say that we have a God who says never give up.
Indeed.
And he has a universe that we could have said, well, roll up and start all over again. He kind of halfway did it with Noah, but then he stopped. I never give up. And I would tell this writer to go to those people, and if they're feeling enough misery, because misery helps us grow sometime, give them a copy of the book. And I assume they have now emancipated older children who are quite entitled and self-centered. But it will help them to deal with those children in a different, those adult children, in a healthier and more redemptive way. It may involve some confrontations. It may involve some not paying for things they would like to pay for. But our job is, no matter how old our kids are, is to help them be autonomous. And so there's always a lot of hope in making people autonomous.
You know, our mutual friend, Dr. Greg Smalley, often talks about temporarily disrupting harmony to achieve a deeper peace. And you think about how many people live at a low level of misery because they're just scared to death to temporarily disrupt harmony, but they're living with a low level of misery, you know?
Yeah, it's kind of like, I think Jesus was fairly disruptive, but we're really glad he came.
Yeah. Isn't that the truth? But is this a fear of man? I mean, when you're looking at confronting the person who's entitled, you know things are probably going to change if you have a face-off with them. Is that a fear of man, or what is it, a self-preservation? What is that?
Most of the time, it's dependency. The reason that we don't speak the truth in love, as the Bible says, a lot of people, is we have a dependency on that person for something they have. Like, I depend on you to respect me, but you might not if I confront you. I depend on you to be warm and nice to me, and you might not. I depend on you to be there for me. I depend on you to support me.
Or to need me. Mm-hmm.
And so when we finally work through that and go, you know, I need lots of things because we're supposed to have needs. Needs are good. God gave us needs. I'll make sure I've got a bank of those needs. I call it a life team in the book. I'll have a life team around me of 4 to 7 people. If you won't meet those needs, God brought me those people, and so now I'm not leveraged. I'm not dependent on you anymore because I got some nice folks around me.
And then you can take the step up. More with Dr. John Townsend in a moment. We're going to talk about the challenges of living with an entitled person. More with him when we come back. Glad you tuned in today. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise, talking to Dr. John Townsend. I always love having him on the show, celebrating the release of his brand new book, The Entitlement Cure. There's a cure for entitlement. Did you know that? Subtitle is Finding Success in Doing Hard Things the Right Way. And in the book, John, you talk about some of the challenges of living with an entitled person as alienation, anger, helplessness. Talk about, with all the thousands of people you've counseled in the past, some of these things that surface for the person who's living with the entitled person.
Well, you notice several things kind of in the sphere of life, Susie. The first one you notice, unfortunately, is that they have a marked lack of empathy for how they impact you and other people. So when their defensiveness, you know, bugs you or pushes you away, or when they lie, or even in serious cases like drug addiction or whatever, and you say, this is how this is affecting me, they kind of either minimize it and say, well, it's not that bad, or you're overreacting, or I really don't care. And you don't get that sense that there's a deep interest and empathy for how you affect people. One of the things you find out in psychologically healthy people is that they make choices, but they do care about those around them. They care about how they impact them. So that's one, is the lack of empathy. Another is that they tend to have certain destructive patterns of behavior that make life not work for them. They can't keep a job down, so somebody's got to bail them out. They're always having a girlfriend and boyfriend and wife and husband break up, so they're, you know, their relational life's a mess. Parenting issues. Self-care is often a problem where they're not taking care of their bodies, problems with substances, and also spiritual issues where there's kind of a lack of interest in a deeper walk with God. So you start to see that their patterns of life are not working for them. And like I say in the book, the entitled person is living a life that's going upstream from the way God had it. God has a life of love and responsibility and empathy and all that. And you go down the life and you're in a little rowboat and you do really well. But if you go the other way and say it's about me and I don't care about my patterns and how I affect people, you're swimming upstream and it's just going to break down sooner or later.
Hmm. So tough love is called for from one situation to another. I suppose it's just unique to every situation. But you also say there's a place for compassion because, for one, it's not all their fault. And we all have attitudes of entitlement to some extent. And that change only happens in the presence of compassion. Those were really good because you can see how you could develop a significant offense with a person that you love so much because you're so irritated with their immaturity. But it isn't all their fault. And we all have senses of entitlement that we might not even realize. And if we've lost our compassion, this is a perfect storm waiting to happen. So say a bit more about that, if you would.
It really is true. And, you know, actually, Susie, even if it were all their fault, 100% their fault, we still have to have compassion because God had compassion on us and our sin is our fault. So I just think that we have to be really hard on the issue and soft on the person. You know, they're a person. They've got feelings and they're a child of God and all this stuff. And you have to be really tough on the attitude problems, the behavior problems, and self-centeredness. So the mantra I use, I got this from the Bible, was that we have to have truth without judgment. You know, truth has got to be without judgment or condemnation, or you can't metabolize it. And we have to have grace without license. Grace doesn't mean letting anybody do what they want to all the time. That creates chaos. But if you've got a lot of non-condemnational, very direct truth, and a lot of grace, meaning I can get in your shoes, that's the very best predictive model for somebody changing.
And you think about it, you know, we live in this wealthy, free land. We don't even realize how entitled we are until we lose some of the comforts that we've just grown so accustomed to, you know. My hubby just got back from Rwanda, and he just said, I've never seen poverty like what I saw over there. And
oh, goodness.
And I was just thinking, and this is almost embarrassing to admit, but it's like I feel perpetually impatient when I'm driving behind somebody on a highway who's going 25 miles too slow because they're texting. I mean, that really is a pet peeve. Can I get an amen? But it's like, I feel like the perpetual impatience speaks to my own entitlement. I feel like you shouldn't be on the highway. I should be able to drive the speed limit. But you can see, if you look at our areas of irritation, I bet we would find entitlement there, wouldn't we?
Yeah, Susan, we call that hashtag first world problems.
There you go.
Oh, my latte's too cold.
Yes.
And I have a section in the book called Pocket Entitlement, where it's sort of like, let's stop pointing at everybody else and look at our own, because mm-hmm. we're kids of Adam and Eve. And I talk about my own pocket entitlement to try to be vulnerable. Like, I have one kind of like yours with the traffic thing, is I fly a lot, and I'm a United guy. Just I try to go United all the time. And there's a thing that happened at O'Hare Airport in Chicago. It's just kind of crazy making sometimes. And I love United. I'm committed to them, but goodness gracious, I'll have like 1,000 people in an auditorium waiting for me, and I'm in California, so I got to get the O'Hare to go to, say, Baltimore. Got to go across country. So I'll have a layover in Chicago, and I'm on O'Hare, and got to get to Baltimore, the people in the auditorium, and then they'll say there's a delay. I say, okay, last life. And so I go to the next gate, and they say, oh, there's another delay. And I say, okay. And the third time it'll say, sorry, another delay. The gate is 15 minutes away, and that flight's leaving in 4 minutes.
Exactly. I've had that happen.
And you do the math. And I caught myself. I was writing the book. I was working on the book, Susie, and I caught myself saying, doesn't United understand that I've got 1,000 people waiting for me to hear some wisdom?
Obviously
and
not.
The answer is no. And I had to win. I said, what an idiot. I mean, here I am, like, you know, I should, United should, like, bend the rules for me because I got some people waiting for me. I thought, God, I better write about that in the book because we all have this.
We do. And, you know, you think about two even extremes around entitlement. We're talking about those who kind of make everybody else pay because they think they're special and shouldn't have to. And then maybe this isn't another extreme. It's just an amplified version of it. But when you see people of great wealth and status who would say at a hotel counter, do you know who I am? I mean, when I hear things like that, I want to throw up because I'm like, wow, but that is entitlement with a capital E, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Now we're talking about more severe forms, and God bless them. God's only answer for them is a little more pain, I hate to say.
Mm-hmm.
You know, reality should make us into nice people. God gave us reality with rules and failure and our own limitations to make us nice and humble and be productive. And that kind of don't you know who I am, they just don't have a good outcome until they start losing things. You know, God only has two motivations for us, Susie, to change. One motivation is growth. I want to grow because God says grow. I don't want to be better. I don't want to be healthier. And unfortunately, the other motivation is pain. And for my book, I always try to go to growth because I'm not into pain. So I always go, God, you know, tell me right now because I don't want my life to go off a cliff. Unfortunately, really entitled people have to experience pain because they're not into growth. But the good news is I've done these principles for many years with people, and they got the pain, and then they got these principles, and they went, hey, I'm into growth now. I want to learn to love. I want to learn to listen. I want to learn to play by the rules, and they're fine.
And this is the thing, is you even referenced a story in the book of a young man that you've worked with for a long time who was just kind of spoiled and, you know, didn't think the rules applied to him and caused a lot of trouble. But he was really smart, and he went through pain, and he attributed his growth to pain. But you pushed him a little further, and you said, you know, pain in itself isn't going to change unless you're willing to take some personal responsibility, which you did. And I want you to speak to that even, because some people go through the fire, and they still smell like smoke, and nothing's changed, and you wonder what it'll take, but there are some who lean in and learn, and they're better for it.
Yeah, you can always tell that. Excuse me, this is what I always tell my clients to do: is when you encounter, I don't know, maybe your company just lost $5 million in a bad deal, or maybe you found out you got a kid who's, you know, smoking dope and you don't know what to do. The idea is not how fast do I get out of the pain, because I promise you, you'll have that pain again. The idea is to say, what do I need to learn from this? To stop, slow down a little bit, and say, God, what do you want me to learn? And you might say, I learned that I trusted the wrong people. Mm-hmm. Or I learned that I didn't say no and put my foot down when I should have. Or I learned that I avoided some tough things and these things happen. Then you're going to be okay. It's sort of like when we just want to get rid of the pain, God promises it'll get worse. He just loves us enough to say that. But when we say, what lesson do you want me to learn? It gets better.
Yeah, amazing. Okay, so here's a question for you. Some people lack maybe confidence and they fear failure, which manifests self-preservation and maybe blaming others because for their lack of drive because they're actually really, really afraid. Is there a distinction between entitlement and this mindset? Or are they just intricately related?
On a research level, you would say they are related but not identical variables. You do see a lot of entitled people who have that mindset of, you know, avoiding risk and that sort of thing. But then there's some people that are just afraid, not because of entitlement, but because, for example, they've been beat up a lot or had a lot of criticism or condemnation or you're never good enough. And so if you're a counselor or a pastor working with people like that, it's not one size fits all. People who are afraid of risk and are risk avoidant, you have to find out, is it based on entitlement or is it based on basically kind of being sort of disheartened.
Yeah, I mean, you even probably see that someone coming out of a failed marriage who wants to love again, but they get close enough to it and they can't bear it. it's not entitlement. It's just absolute fear and paralyzation.
And they need a lot of compassion and sort of hand-holding until they get their strength back and that sort of thing.
Wow, such a good distinction. Let's look at your definition of the hard way, and that's in your subtitle, Finding Success in Doing Hard Things the Right Way. You're right. The hard way is the habit of doing what is best rather than what is comfortable to achieve a worthwhile outcome. Unpack that, if you would, a bit more.
Well, basically, I just went back to the Bible on this one, Susan. I started thinking, okay, if entitlement doesn't work, because I see it not work, what does? And the answer is that all of us are supposed to get somewhere in life, supposed to fall in love and have great relationships and maybe have kids and find a mission and purpose and be healthy and all those good things. And it's not easy. That successful people whom I study all the time, they always look at life as an oven, not a microwave. It's going to take more time than that you ever dreamed. But everybody I ever studied who is highly successful, either a leader or a pastor or just a really good person, they all said, I just had to get up in the morning and do hard things, and then my afternoon was easier if I did hard things first. And that was sort of the eye-opener for me, was that's what it's like. And people say, oh, you mean don't do it the easy way? And I said, it's not that. God doesn't give that option. There's the hard way and there's the harder way.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you go the hard way, well, you end up with good relationships and you're healthy and you find God in a great way and you help the world and you have a lot of hobbies. That's still hard, but it works. The harder way is if you avoid all that, and then your life starts to deteriorate over time. And I always love to go back to Jesus' words when he said in Luke, he said, take my yoke upon me. He said, it's easy. So it's a yoke, and a yoke has a certain weight on it if you're, you know, of an ox, but it's easy. What he's saying is the hard way, that's as bad as it gets. Our life should be hard because life is hard. But there's no easy way. There's either the hard way, which is light for God, and I'm not explaining this right, or there's the harder way without God's purposes, which is really worse. So those are our choices, and I just say choose the hard way instead of the harder way.
Yeah, and you say the benefits, some of the benefits of taking the hard way, a path to reaching your own goals and dreams, better quality relationships for sure, a clarified career and job direction, a way to face and solve challenges, better self-care and life balance and spiritual growth. You think about taking the harder way, the entitled way. When would you ever find confidence and a strong sense of God's direction in your life if you're living for yourself? We're going to talk about how to overcome that entitlement mentality if you are somebody who has it, okay? More with Dr. John Townsend in a moment. For grace to trust him more. Do you think that maybe what is behind entitlement? You don't trust that God is good and trust that what his word says is true. We're talking about the entitlement cure. It's the title of John Townsend's new book, Finding Success in Doing Hard Things the Right Way. And John, when I was writing the book, Growing Grateful Kids, years ago, I was sitting in an airport gate getting ready to take a flight, and this teacher struck up a conversation with me, and she'd retired early. She was a teacher for a very long time, but she could not bear the entitlement mentality another day. She just said she was so disheartened. She would follow these kids through into their adulthood, and she said something that about knocked me out of my seat. She said, I followed. She said, the kids who were entitled, whose parents made constant excuses for them, bailed them out constantly, she said they displayed the same attributes as the drug addict students that she worked for, that the rules didn't apply to them. They were takers, not givers. They were weak in relationships, weak in employment. And she said, not to say you advocate for neglect, but she said, my students who were, I could tell, were neglected actually fared much better in adulthood because they really didn't assume the world revolved around them. And I thought, wow, that we would, when we see that picture, that we're not doing our kids any favors by trying to make life more comfortable for them. We're actually disabling them. I mean, I want you to speak to that.
Yeah. You know, the old story that pastors always say about parenting where the eagle, sooner or later, when the kids get old enough, the eagle sort of kicks the kids out of the nest and they learn how to fly.
Mm-hmm.
And that's God's way. When the parent continues to enable, beyond the person's ability. Here's the key of it, is beyond their ability. You don't take a three-year-old and say, go get a college degree, and you don't let a three-year-old play in traffic. But you do let a three-year-old, you know, have a timeout for not picking up their building blocks. And when you don't allow that child to struggle with an age-appropriate challenge, they become weak, they become fearful, and they become spoiled. And it's a problem. And the when you look at the research on parenting, there's always two factors that come up at the top. Number one is that good parents are warm. They're just warm people, and they're easy to hang out with and loving. But number two is they're strict. And you got parents who, well, she's the warm one, he's the strict one, or vice versa. And that's not a good scenario. Or both are warm and not strict, or both are strict and not warm. But when both parents are both warm and strict, the person that comes out of that oven at 18 is a pretty cool person.
Wow. Great insight. Eric from Wilton, Minnesota said, what are some steps we can take to back out the entitlement mindset when we found we're right in the midst of it? And I don't know if this is a good time to, we just got about 8 minutes left to talk about your hard way principles of humility, independence, connectedness. If you want to go that route, or if you've got just some more direct advice for Eric.
Yeah, let me just kind of target your question, Eric. Thank you for your question. By the way, it's kind of the best question anybody can ask, psychologically and spiritually both, is, you know, I don't want to have that disease, and how do I not do it? The very first one, I think, is a spiritual part of it, Eric, which would be go to God humbly and say, and just read Psalm, pray. I do this regularly. Pray Psalm 139. Search me and know me and try my anxious heart and see if there be any hurtful ways in me. That begins to chip away at entitlement, because we have a big God that loves us so much that he doesn't want us to distance from him, and he will help us. It's kind of letting God know, I'm on the operating table. I'm not running around crazy anymore with my own world. I'm on your operating table, and help. So that's kind of a position to take. The second one is to get around some, and I talk about this in the book, you've got to get around some very, very safe, accepting, growth-oriented, and honest people. And I'll say it again, safe, accepting, growth-oriented and honest. They're safe because they can't have any condemnation, because we all shrink from condemnation. They're accepting, meaning they know everything about you, and, you know, they may disagree, but they're not going to, you know, bail on you. Growth-oriented, they've got to be submitted to the process of growth themselves. If they're not into spiritual, emotional growth, you know, I don't want to hang around them. They're toxic. And then truthful, they've got to be people that will say, Eric, I've noticed that you blame your boss on everything. Eric, I've noticed that you tell everybody it's always your kids or your wife or whatever, and in a loving way they get in your face and they start to change you. The third thing is to begin to observe your day and see, I think everybody that's healthy has always observes their day like this. One is, am I like operating in a healthy way? Am I loving? Am I holding on to my boundaries? Am I doing what I should do? In other words, am I like taking care of life in a healthy way? And secondly, how am I impacting other people? Gosh, I kind of cut my kids off, or I let things go crazy and I shouldn't have. And if you do those three things, you pretty much can cure it.
Thank you, Eric. And I think you get a copy of his book, which will help you immensely. Yep, Grace says you get a copy. One last question from Lisa. She said, can Dr. Townsend comment on the connection between charity and entitlement? Sometimes we donate to a charity or send money to an impoverished community only to find they've become entitled, which makes us start to resent them for their heart, and it becomes this negative cycle. What say you, Dr. Townsend?
Yeah, we all have a responsibility to give responsibly, Lisa, unfortunately, there are some, I'm on boards and stuff, and I love ministries and service organizations, but if you don't do a due diligence and just write a check impulsively and don't check with, like, other people or websites that evaluate them, what you end up is you can create a dependency. Now, let me clarify that. I don't make all entitlements bad in the book. I mean, I've got a lot of friends who are veterans, and they deserve, for being in harm's way for us to protect us, they deserve all the entitlements they'll get, medical help and financial help. They deserve that because they did some things for us.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the poor and disenfranchised who don't have a chance, well, the church and the government are supposed to help them. That's just part of life. I'm talking about a psychological entitlement as a problem, not this organizational. But do the due diligence with your organization and ask them this question. What do you do to help these people to become autonomous Because I love that old phrase, you can give a guy a fish and he'll ask for one tomorrow. But if you teach him to fish, he won't ask after a while. So always ask the organization, is the money going to kind of a well that will never be filled, or are we helping people to take over for themselves? Always ask that.
And that, I would tell you that's what my husband's experience was in Rwanda, that they took great pride in the things that they built. So if you came and taught them to build so they could have a livelihood, they couldn't wait to show you. But the things that they would call the Mzungus, the white people would come in and build some building. If it broke down, they would leave it because they would say, oh, that when they come back, they'll fix that. But look at my pig farm, you know. And boy, he said it was just such a eye-opener to as much as we can empower them so that they can have a self-sustaining community. Absolutely amazing.
Yep. God made us to be autonomous.
Wow, so good. One last quote before I ask you to pray. I'd love for you to comment on this. You said, if your goal is to just do whatever you wanted to do and do it right now, you would not need discipline. But losing lots of weight, having great relationships, finding your career niche, and being successful all take time, and they involved delaying gratification repeatedly over the course of time. And the reason I want you to comment on that, because delaying gratification to me seems the exact opposite of entitlement. I get to have comfort right now. But people who really achieve great things have that discipline and the will to say, I'm going to postpone this now because I've got a greater vision for my life. Say a word about that before we pray, if you would.
Yeah, when you look at real successful people, they endure things right now, like getting up in the morning and working out and writing reports that are boring for them and meeting with people that just don't give them a lot of passion. And they're not addicted to passion. I love passion, but sometimes people say, well, I'm not passionate for it. I'm not passionate about taking out the garbage. Well, I'm not either. I'm not passionate about Excel spreadsheets. Well, me either, but I do them. So the passion's got to be about the future. My passion is to have a great company, a great family, a great organization. Put the passion into the future and then think all the cool things that are going to happen if I go down the road. It doesn't have to be instant passion right now.
And the entitlement mindset looks at the things that you're walking in now that you disciplined yourself before for and say, wow, must be rough, you know, and I want to slap such people. I'm like, hey, I sat down and wrote those 80,000 words all by myself. So this is good conversation, Dr. Tones. I'm wondering if you would pray for the Erics. I love that he called in and asked that question. And those like him who really want not to be like this anymore. Would you pray?
God, I pray for all of us that will do Solomon's prayer, who said to God, I'm not asking for riches. I'm asking for wisdom because I'm like a little child. We're like little children. Help us to learn the humble way of your ways. And help us to help those in our world that tend to be entitled, and help them to learn that life is much better when we learn your ways. In Jesus' name.
Amen. Amen. Thank you so much for the time. As always, great conversation, John. Thank you.
Thanks, Susie.
Title of his book, again, is The Entitlement Cure, Finding Success in Doing Hard Things the Right Way. Definitely check out this title.
Jesus, Jesus, how I trust him.
Appreciate you so much. I'm really glad you listened today. I hope you found some encouragement and insight here. Well, you've been listening to Live the Promise. I'm Susie Larson. And in just a bit, you'll find a podcast of today's program up on our website at myfaithradio.com. I always love it when you're a radio missionary. If you feel like you know someone who'd be encouraged by today's conversation with either Sheila Walsh or John Townsend, with a click of a button, you can send it out by Facebook, email, or Twitter. Remember this, the Lord wants you to last long and finish strong. And he is the one. We'll keep you strong to the end. Have a great day.